From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Always Dreaming with a 2.5 length lead at 16th to go. Looking at Lee is second. Then comes Battle of Midway, Classic Empire. They're coming to the line, and the dream comes true. Always Dreaming has won the Kentucky Derby.
They come past the 16th. It's Gervin. Gervin, Brian Hernandez Jr. for Joe Sharp. And Gervin has won the TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Conquest Mo Money, here's the chance, Classic Empire. It is Conquest Mo Money, Classic Empire.
Irish War cries in front because they come to the final 16th. Battalion Runner's not going with him. Then comes Cloud Computing down to the line. Irish War Cry has won the Wood Memorial.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A very happy Belmont Stakes Day to everybody throughout HRRN Nation. Happy to have you with us this morning here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, and former jockey Jeff Bloom. We are together on this edition of the Equine Forum. We are once again positioned above the finish line here at Belmont Park for the 11th consecutive year. We bring you coverage of the Test of the Champion, the final jewel in the crown, if you want to look at it like that. And the Belmont Stakes coming up later today, the 149th running set to go shortly after 6:35 Eastern time. And we're going to have that exclusive coverage for you beginning 2 o'clock Eastern time today with the undercard coverage presented by visitbarbados.org. And then we come back at 5 o'clock Eastern time with all that coverage of Belmont 149, which is presented by our friends at twinspires.com. JT, no better sight than to be standing here overlooking Big Sandy.
Yeah, it's beautiful today. It's a great day in New York, and we're looking at a nice skyline, a little haze in the distance, but very pretty here. The horses are training, almost break time.
Yeah, temperatures mid-80s, plenty of sunshine, firm turf course, fast main track. It couldn't be any better. And I would think, Jeff, that with this type of forecast, that Belmont Park is going to get a lot of walk-up traffic throughout the day, because I think the people that are not the hardcore horse racing fans, so to speak, that might just want to come out here to check out an event or something that's popular in the New York area, they say, well, let's see what the weather's going to be. But when you have a forecast like this, and they've been calling for this kind of weather all week long, I think they're going to get a lot of walk-up traffic. I think it's going to help attendance today.
I think it's going to be a huge help to the attendance because there's so many things you can do in the New York area, obviously. But with this kind of weather, it is the Belmont Stakes. And while there is no Triple Crown on the line, it's still a big day, not to mention the undercard races. I mean, it is a spectacular listing of races that we have afforded the opportunity to benefit from seeing these kind of horses run in races like we're going to get to see today. And to cap it all off with the Belmont Stakes, great day for the locals to come out and participate and enjoy the festivities.
Yeah, 10 stakes races. Six of those are grade ones, culminating with that 149th Belmont Stakes. The Breeders' Cup, not going to be contested until November 3rd and November 4th at Del Mar. Of course, we will be there as your exclusive radio home with the Breeders' Cup World Championships. But there are two Breeders' Cup Win and You're In races on the docket for today. You have the Grade 1 Met Mile and the Grade 1 Ogden Phipps, and both of those just outstanding races. And, of course, the Ogden Phipps is going to feature Champion Songbird.
Yeah, Songbird, a lot of people are excited about her comeback. And I guess everybody but Andy Serling, he said he was picking against her because that's kind of his nature. So, anyway, we'll see what happens with her today. She's looking spectacular, made the trip well, and it's going to be an exciting day for a lot of Songbird fans.
Do you guys think that the Belmont is almost overshadowed by those other stakes races because of the fact that we don't have a Triple Crown? We really don't have the interest in the Belmont Stakes in terms of the horses we've seen throughout the Triple Crown Trail, meaning that Always Dreaming isn't here, the Derby winner, Cloud Computing, the Preakness winner, is not here, both of those opting not to run in the Belmont. So you have a new group of three-year-olds. Jeff, do you think that maybe the Belmont is somewhat overshadowed when you look at names like Songbird and the other top horses on the undercard?
I wouldn't describe it as overshadowed, but certainly there's competition for the interest that the people have, the handicappers, the fans, the people that are coming out here to wager on these races. But look, it's the Belmont Stakes. It's a big deal. It is the third jewel of the Triple Crown. And these are the three-year-olds, many of these horses that are running today, some of them a little bit fresher, some of them that maybe they're not household names yet, that are going to go on and have big careers. So I think there's plenty of excitement, not completely overshadowed. There's just not as much attention focused on the race because there's not as much on the line.
And several horses returning from the Kentucky Derby that skipped the Preakness. Five, as a matter of fact, in the 12-horse field. You have Taprit, who was sixth in the Derby. You have Gormley, who was ninth. Irish Warcry, the morning line favorite for the Belmont, he was 10th in the Derby and then skipped the Preakness. Patch was 14th in the Derby. And J-Boy's Echo, who was 15th. Out of those horses, JT, is Irish Warcry the most likely? And I know he's the morning line favorite, so I'm going to ask it this way. Is he the most likely winner of those five?
You know, that's an interesting question because a lot of the race is dependent on the pace. There's not a lot of pace in this race. And whoever gets the first run on the closers, I think, is going to have the advantage. He has a good style in that he can sit just off. But I read this morning one pundit was talking about the fact that he could go wire to wire. So I think it's going to depend. I hate to use the expression jockey's race because I think that every race is a jockey's race. But it's that kind of a setup. It's going to depend on who goes, who sits, and who can get the mile and a half.
You know, I think that phrase is used often in horse racing. And, of course, we're talking about world-class jockeys. These guys, they have ice in their veins. They know how to ride and win big races. But more so here at Belmont Park on Big Sandy, it is a unique racetrack. A rider that has ridden a lot of races on the Belmont Park configuration is at a huge benefit, in my opinion, because it is rather confusing in terms of when do you go ahead and start gearing your horse up for that run down the stretch. The reality is we're talking about a track that's about a half mile bigger than most tracks that these jockeys ride on. And it can be a little bit daunting knowing when to move because your horses are used to moving at a certain point in a race, say the 3/8 mile pole, which is in a completely different location on this racetrack. And so by the time you hit the 16th mile pole with a horse, you might have already used up that precious energy you're going to need for that last kick.
I talked to Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith yesterday, and one question that I asked him, and by the way, his interview comes up later on in the program today. I'll tell you the full roster in just a minute. But I asked Mike about making that move and being such a unique surface, being a mile and a half in circumference here. I said, is there a certain point? And keep in mind, Mike's won the race twice. Is there a certain point that you say, okay, now's the time to push the trigger? Now's where I have to say, let's go. And he said, no, it doesn't work like that. It depends on the pace scenario. It depends on what's happened earlier in the race. And he said, if you're on the lead, if you maybe have something left, maybe you wait and push the button a little bit later, you know, or if, for example, if you don't think you're going to have quite as much, maybe you want to push the button earlier. And he went through this whole scenario with me, which I thought was just tremendous. I mean, there's a guy that's, you know, certainly as good as it gets. And he basically said, no, it's not as simple as just saying, this is the point in the race where you have to go.
Yeah, well, each race is unique. And, of course, the Belmont Stakes being a mile and a half, it's one lap around. So when you have that situation, a lot of jocks will move a little early. They'll get excited. I mean, jocks get pumped up for big races just like the fans do. And if you move a little too soon here, it can cost you at the end. Just ask Stuart Elliott.
Well, and to that point, you know, Mike is absolutely right. But here's the thing. You're not in the race alone, and you may have a pretty good handle on how much horse you have, and when you think you're going to make that move, you have a pretty good take on the pace scenario, and now you have an overzealous jockey that's maybe not as familiar with the racetrack, gets a little bit excited, and they tie that other jockey's hands. They compromise the pace scenario at a different point in the race. So now a guy has to actually start picking up the tempo a little bit sooner than they would like. They don't want to let another horse get first run on him. So there's a lot of moving pieces, like as in any race, I think more so because it is a mile and a half racetrack.
One jockey who knows this surface very well is jockey Irod Ortiz Jr., and he is going to be aboard Looking at Lee. He will ride him for the first time in this afternoon's Belmont. Looking at Lee, the only horse in the 12-horse field this afternoon who has competed in all three Triple Crown races, and you remember that performance in the Derby where he was runner-up behind Always Dreaming. We'll see if Looking at Lee can give Steve Asmussen back-to-back victories in the test of the champion. All right, well, I mentioned a very busy show. Several special guests are going to be with us over the course of the next 2 hours. Now, when we come back from our first break, you're going to hear from Michael Hernan of Gainesway. Michael, also the breeder of newcomer to the Triple Crown Trail. That's Hollywood Handsome, who goes to the post later today in Belmont. We're going to talk to Michael about Hollywood Handsome and that breeding. Should be a fun interview coming up in just a few minutes. Also, by the way, Hollywood Handsome, a graduate of the Gainesway consignment. Rajiv Miraj took the time to visit with Jeff earlier yesterday, as a matter of fact. And Rajiv's interview is coming up at 8:35 Eastern time this morning. You won't want to miss it. Does some great stuff about his comeback and what it's taken to get back to this point after a serious injury not too long ago. Then you'll hear our Fasig Tipton Turf Showcase, where we take a look at the Manhattan, the race preceding the Belmont. That'll be at the end of the first hour. Dora Delgado from Breeders' Cup will be with us at 9 o'clock Eastern time. You'll hear from Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith at the end of the program, right around 9:35 Eastern, as he looks back on the career of the great Holy Bull, who unfortunately left us this past Wednesday, having died Wednesday evening. And Mike will look back on his career, take a look at so many of the memorable races that he had the chance to be aboard Holy Bull, and he'll take a look at his horse in the Belmont Stakes this afternoon. That's Meantime. So an awful lot coming up here. A quick poll question for you. We're going to keep it real simple. You can go to at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Who wins this year's Belmont Stakes? That's it. Who is your pick in this year's Belmont Stakes? We want to know. We'll try to retweet those. We'll try to read some of those as we move throughout the show for you as well. Busy morning. We're back with more on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Flat Out Fast.
Flat Out by three coming the wire, and Flat Out is gonna do it.
Flat Out Tough.
And here comes Flat Out, pulls Full Out, and on by to take the lead as they come to the wire.
Flat Out Sound.
Into the final 16th of a mile, and Flat Out is going to prevail.
A three-time Grade 1 winner of more than $3.6 million. Flat Out, North America's leading earner at stud from the AP Indy Sire line. Standing at Spindthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. Or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
At the top of the stretch, Grandpa's Dream right up against the rail off the turn. Hollywood Handsome with every chance to get by from second. A length and a half to make up and just outside of a furlong to do it. Grandpa's Dream, fending off the challenge of Hollywood Handsome so far, but Hollywood Handsome is game and keeps on battling. Now a length behind, 100 yards to go. Grandpa's Dream, one final try from Hollywood Handsome. These two to the wire. Hollywood Handsome got it. Up in time. Over Grandpa's Dream. Farther back, it was War Daddy and Howell Mountain.
Travis Stone with the call of that allowance race at Churchill Downs on May 14th. A big win for Hollywood Handsome, the son of Gainsway stallion Tapazar, who is one of the newcomers in this year's Belmont Stakes, and looking forward to visiting with his breeder, Michael Hernan, coming up here momentarily for you on the Equine Forum. Welcome back to Belmont Park. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Jeff Bloom high above the finish line, where we will be positioned later this afternoon for all of our coverage of the Belmont Stakes. It begins at 2 o'clock Eastern with 3 hours of undercard coverage. Anthony Stabile and Jason Bides will handle that broadcast from 2 to 5 Eastern, presented by visitbarbados.org. Then we come back at 5 o'clock Eastern time with our exclusive coverage of Belmont 149. That coverage from 5 to 7, presented by our friends at twinspires.com. Michael Hernan with us now from Gainsway, and of course a man who has a small broodmare band, and one of those broodmares is the dam of Hollywood Handsome, going to the post in the Belmont later today. Michael, first of all, congratulations, my friend, and as always, thanks for being here.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great to be here on a nice, sunny Saturday morning here, Belmont Stakes Day, here on the backside of the racetrack right now. Track just closed. Obviously, it's a big day of racing. And we've got a couple of shots in the Belmont. Todd Pletcher's horse, Taprit, has come into this race very well. He looks great. Todd is very pleased with him, and he could be Taprit's third Belmont winner. He's bred to get the distance and got a shot there. And then Dallas Stewart brings up his long shot, Hollywood Handsome, son of Tapazar. So he's a grandson of Tappet, and he looks well. He's very quiet, calm, kind colt. Looks like he's carrying good weight. Dallas thinks he wants the distance, and hopefully his best races are ahead of him. And he runs for great people, Mark and Nancy Stanley, and we're excited he's in the race. He's 30-1 on the morning line, and maybe he can sneak in and get a piece of it.
Michael, for those of us who have never had the privilege of doing this, what's it like to be the breeder of a horse that's competing in a classic Triple Crown race?
Well, this is a very new experience for me. I mean, I have had some luck previously with Zazu, a daughter of Tappet, who would go on and win two grade ones. But having an actual horse here and being here is very cool, and I'm excited, and we're just fingers crossed, and I'm just very excited.
You've got a horse in Hollywood Handsome who's by Tapazar out of a forestry mare that maybe doesn't scream a mile and a half, but the horse has a nice running style for this race.
Not really hearing you there really well, Jude, but I think you were talking about the distance. And you know, this horse, Dallas has maintained all along, he's a closer, and he wants to go long, and he did his best running late in his last race, which was allowance race, which he won at Churchill. So Florent Giroux, who won on him that day, is back aboard. And, you know, we're optimistic. We realize he's a 30-1 chance, but if you're not in, you can't win, and great to have representation in the race itself, and just spending some time here with Mark Stanley and Dallas this morning, and having a lot of fun.
Michael, for people who have never done this before, take us through the thought process when you have a mare, a forestry mare, as Jude mentioned, and you're looking for that stallion. Obviously, Tapazar has been pretty hot over at Gainsway. How do you know that Tapazar is the right one? How do you go about picking out the right stallion for that mare?
Well, you know, funny, I bought this mare who I liked. I looked at her in the back ring at Keeneland. She had a nice foal with her, and I took a shot. The foal actually sold for more than she did. I paid $65,000 for her. I've bred her back to Trap Shot, and I've bred her to Tapazar again. I've got a good filly foal on the ground. And largely, Mike, I've bred her to him as I believe in him. He retired sound off a win in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at Santa Anita. He's out of a deputy minister mayor, is Tapazar, and he was a legitimately good horse. He improved with age. And this horse, his son, Hollywood Handsome, looks like he's improving to me. He's grown. He's lengthened. I definitely think, regardless of what happens today, his best races are ahead of him. And Dallas is on board with that, and hopefully he's a good horse, and we're taking a shot here. The Stanleys are taking the shot. They put up the money. They bought the colt from me at Basic Tipton October sale, and my good friend Chuck Zachney, who raced Fleet Alex, he was the underbidder. I recommended the horse to him, and he was clean on x-rays and scope, and Chuck, it turned out, chased him in the auction, but Mark was tied on, and he gave us a big price, and we're delighted with that. And I'm especially pleased that the horse is starting to pay his way, and hopefully he'll, carry on and continue to improve. Tapazar himself looks like his progeny are going to be like him. He's a winner at two, a good horse at three, and a Grade One winner and Breeders' Cup winner at four. So I expect them to go on with time. And one of these sons, a Tappet, is going to step up and do it. And fingers crossed it'll be Tapazar.
Yeah, certainly wouldn't hurt today to capture one of the classics with the Tapazar offspring in the Belmont Stakes. The distance of the Belmont Stakes, a mile and a half, is such a unique distance. And when we look at pairings for breeding horses to get that two turns, what is it about a horse and the physicality of the horse? You say, you know, you're talking to Dallas Stewart, and he really felt that Hollywood Handsome would take to the mile and a half distance. There's such a separation, it seems, between horses' ability to go, say, a mile and a 16th or a mile and an eighth, and then go that extra little bit of distance to the mile and a half. Is there something you can see in the horse as they're developing that is an indication to you that this horse clearly wants that distance of ground, that extra little bit?
Well, you know, quite frankly, we don't know which of these three-year-olds wants a mile and a half. It'll be a first time for all of them. What I can tell you about this horse is he's got a wonderful disposition. He's very quiet and calm and relaxed. He's a very kind colt. And, you know, you could throw a kid up on him and they'd be in good shape. So he's got the disposition. I think he's just going to improve. He finishes up in his races strong. He finished strong at Churchill. And we're just optimistic. Again, he's 30-1. But he has, you know, he's a good-sized horse. He's 16-1 hands. He's got good stretch to him. He's very clean-legged. And he's got this demeanor that allows himself to retain his energy and his confidence. And we're just taking the shot. And hopefully he'll run big today. But again, you know, obviously he's a 30-1 shot on the board. But, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that, you know, he's going to finish this race well, and not all of the rivals in the race maybe want to finish well. So we're hoping he does, and hopefully he breaks clean from the gate and gets a good trip, and then we'll find out what he's got.
Well, Michael, I can remember a few years ago when Tappet was, and he continues to be on a roll, but he was producing winner after winner after winner, and people were saying, well, do they really want to go a mile and a half, though? And along came Tonalist, and then along came Creator, and we can say, yeah, the Tappets want to go a mile and a half, and they can do it very, very easily. And now Tappet may be adding to that legacy, too. So all the best with Tappet and with Hollywood Handsome coming up later this afternoon in the Belmont, and good luck, my friend.
Thanks so much. Good to be on your show. Look forward to seeing you at the track later. It's a great race, a day of racing here at Belmont, and hopefully everybody enjoys this top racing, and good luck with their bets.
Well said. Thanks, Michael. Michael Herner from Gainesway Farm here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, as we told you, you just heard the breeder of Hollywood Handsome and then Tappet, the sire of Tappet. So they have a couple of opportunities to really make some noise and add to that legacy later this afternoon in the 149th test of the champion. All right, coming up, Rajiv Miraj took the time to sit down with Jeff yesterday in the jocks room, and he talked about his comeback. He talked about everything that's gone into making that comeback, and then being here on the big stage again. It's a very special thing for Rajiv, and it was really there were some amazing things that came out of that interview. So you want to stay tuned for that coming up in just a minute. But before we get to that point, I want to remind you that when it comes to state breeding programs, don't wait for a photo. And what I mean by that is that the New York Thoroughbred Breeding Program is the best in the nation by many lengths, and Belmont Stakes runner Twisted Tom is the new standard for quality New York breds. Twisted Tom is one of 19 New York breds entered in the open stakes races that make up the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival. And, you know, it's interesting. We always tell racing fans that you have the best odds of making money when you race New York breds, and I think that's true. Learn more at nybreds.com or go ahead and get with the program. It's all there at nybreds.com. All right, time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf and your weekly look at one of the great moments in thoroughbred racing. It's all brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty in Lexington, Kentucky. And we're back to hear from Rajiv Miraj in just a couple of minutes.
In early October of 1920, amidst full pastel resplendence of early fall, some 30,000 racing fans gathered at Kenilworth Park in suburban Toronto, Canada, in eager anticipation of the much-ballyhooed match race between Sam Riddle's Titan of the Turf, Man o' War, and the 1919 Triple Crown winner, the first ever, by the way, Sir Barton. Man o' War was regarded as virtually invincible in many racing quarters and was an overwhelming favorite amongst those in attendance to defeat Colonel Ross's superb four-year-old. The distance was 1¼ miles, the purse $75,000 plus a $5,000 gold cup. There had been a modicum of controversy generated among racing fans when Earl Sandy, the regular pilot aboard Sir Barton, was replaced for this particular race by Jack Keogh. Commander Ross, the horse's owner, felt Sandy was not riding in top form at that time. The rider aboard the immortal Big Red was his customary reinsman, Clarence Cummer. As a matter of fact, Colonel Ross had first call on Cummer's services, but he deferred to Cummer's wishes in allowing him to ride Riddle's horse. Colonel Ross said, quote, "My action is taken without any prejudice to Sandy, and I am only exercising my right as owner of Sir Barton." The two horses answered the call to post and paraded before the stands looking absolutely fit on their way to the gate. Man o' War looked about nonchalantly as though this were an ordinary occurrence. Henry Morrissey was the starter, and he waited until both champions were perfectly ready. Then he sent them on their way as the webbing flew up, and to the huge roar of the vast throng, the race that was billed as, quote, "the race of the century" was indeed underway. Sir Barton was well away, and he took the lead for the first 16th, but that was all. Man o' War was quickly given his head by Cummer, and he shot by Sir Barton to establish a clear lead as he went the first quarter in a rapid 22-3. It was Man o' War by 2 open lengths and still somewhat in reserve by Cummer as he hit the hop in 46-2, 3/4 in 111-2. Keogh wrapped Sir Barton a couple of times with a stick, but could get no more out of him as Man o' War coasted into and on around the turn, coasting while galloping freely with those long, smooth strides for which he had been well noted. By the time they hit the top of the stretch, Man o' War had opened up to a 3-length advantage after clocking a mile in 137-4. Cummer glanced back at his rival, who was struggling valiantly while fully extended but not closing a single inch of ground. Man o' War was just breezing along in synchronized motion and continued to increase his margin, cruising to the wire a winner in smashing fashion by an open 7 lengths. The final time was 2:03 flat, and Cummer later said, quote, "It was about as easy a score as Man o' War had ever chalked up. It was the lope for the last quarter. Had he wanted to, he could easily have gone a couple of seconds faster." It was far faster than I expected, and I knew Sir Barton had no business with Man O' War after we had gone the first quarter, end of quote. But Sam Riddle was his customary modest self after the winning effort of his stalwart, and Commander Ross, the losing owner, was among the very first to offer his congratulations. It all happened on a resplendent fall day in a beautiful setting at Kenilworth Park in suburban Toronto, Canada, October of 1920. A truly great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
You know, it was right about 2 years ago at this time that a new restaurant opened on Main Street, and it's quickly become a favorite for anybody that wants the best steaks and the best seafood. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood. They were just named one of the best steakhouses in the nation by TastingTable.com, a very big national website. Why don't you give them a visit? It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood on Main Street. TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Pin Oak Stud, home to Broken Vow, sire of 2016 Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner and Eclipse finalist Champagne Room, as well as other Grade 1 winners like Cotton Blossom, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, and Sassy Image. Also home to millionaire and multiple graded stakes winner Alternation by Distorted Humor. A six-time stakes winner, including the Peter Pan, Pimlico Special, and Oaklawn Handicap. Alternation was represented by his first yearlings, which sold last year for up to $160,000, over 20 times his stud fee. Broken Vow and Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Racing fans, at Belmont Day at Santa Anita, so come early for a tremendous undercard from New York. Admission gates open at 8 a.m. and first live race post time at Santa Anita is at 12 noon. Approximate post time for the Belmont Stakes is at 3:50 Pacific time. As always, we guarantee $500,000 in the late pick four and $100,000 in the pick six. Again, admission gates open Saturday at 8 a.m. First live race post time is at 12 noon. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Power.
But Tapazar is just playing too good today. And it's going to be Tapazar and Garrett Gomez coming home with his ears pricked to win the Sham Stakes.
Passion.
And a big performance from Tapazar and Cory Nakatani as they romp in the San Fernando.
Performance.
And Tapazar, a sterling performance today. Tapazar and Cory Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Gainsway stallion Tapazar is a Grade 1 winning miler by leading sire Tappet from the family of champion Untappable, and is Tappet's only Grade 1 winning miler at stud. Tapazar retired sound with more than $972,000 in earnings following a career in which he broke his maiden by 10 and a half lengths at Churchill Downs at 2, went wire to wire to win the Grade 3 Sham Stakes at 3, and was a runaway winner of the Grade 2 San Fernando and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at 4.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As they come toward the top of the stretch, it is Battalion Runner and Irish War Cry. Three quarters in 1:11 and 4, they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry on the outside, it's got a neck in front. Battalion Runner all out, second on the inside, four lengths back to Cloud Computing. Irish War Cry's in front because they come to the final 16th. Battalion Runner's not going with him. Then comes Cloud Computing down to the line. Irish war cry has won the Wood Memorial under Rajiv Mirage. A four-length score over Battalion Runner. Cloud Computing was third and True Timber was fourth in a final time of 1 minute 50.91 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Jeff Bloom, our producer, Sean C. Chauncey, handling our social media as well, where you can weigh in on our poll question today, and that's at HRRN on Twitter. Who's going to win the Belmont Stakes this afternoon? We kept it really simple. We want to hear from you, HRN Nation. Let us know your thoughts on our Twitter feed, at HRRN. And don't forget, coming up at 10 o'clock this morning, you can tune in to Hablando de Ibismo on HRRN and Espanol.com with Roberto Rodriguez. That's 1 hour of Spanish horse racing talk, talking about the Belmont Stakes. Yeah, all in Spanish, HRN and Espanol.com. Well, guys, that call of Irish War Cry, winning the Wood Memorial two starts back. We know things didn't go well for Irish War Cry in the Derby, although he had a shot turning for home. Backed up, he finished 10th. He finished 16 lengths behind Always Dreaming in Louisville 5 weeks ago. But JT, he comes into the race as a fresh horse, and you can't bet against Graham Motion getting a horse to go a mile and a half and coming off of a layoff like this.
Yeah, well, you know, Graham's a great trainer, and he's one of the guys that excels at training horses to go a mile and a half, usually on the turf, but the surface shouldn't matter. Interesting horse because his pedigree does lean toward speed and his style leans toward speed, but there isn't a lot of pace in here, and he could conceivably get an excellent trip right behind whoever decides to take the lead, or maybe blast off and take it himself. So speed is always dangerous. We saw that happen yesterday on the turf with Hawksmoor. So an interesting horse. I wouldn't necessarily bet the ranch on him, but a contender nonetheless.
And those decisions will be left in the hands of the capable jockey, Rajiv Mirage, one of the, in my opinion, more underrated riders in the game today. And, Jeff, you had a chance yesterday to stop by the jocks room and visit with Rajiv.
I did. You know, Rajiv went through plenty to make it back. You're going to hear how passionate he is about riding races, and that passion really is the driving force behind his fighting through not only the physical but the emotional pain to make it back.
Well, the comeback was a pretty long and kind of rough road. In the beginning, it was very brutal. When I say the beginning, I mean like the first like few months, 3-4 months, was the hardest part physically. And after that, it was like to the next phase of starting my rehabilitation, which was long and draining, both mentally and physically, because being an athlete, you're used to being up and about and feeling strong and feeling in the position that I was when I was feeling pretty much helpless, and having to take baby steps to get back in health was tough. And had a lot of pain for over a year. Sometimes it seemingly became like the new normal for me. Like, is it going to be that for the rest of my life to be living in this pain? Even if I wasn't able to ride again, it was still not a quality lifestyle. But I had to fight through. And one of the things that motivated me to fight through all that and to try to get back to full health was the thought that I'd be riding again one day. And if I didn't have that on the table, I don't know where I would be right now. I feel like I would probably be in bad health and not fully recovered, because to push through the rehab, you had to have something to look forward to, because there was many times that I wanted to give up on it because it was just overwhelming, and it was just felt so hard to do. So that part of it, finally in like... In October, I started turning a corner where I started getting pain-free, where I could get off medication and I could go through and start having a regular life. So that was a big step for me, which was about 15 months after my injury. And then it was the next phase of getting strong enough and my balance and everything back to actually be able to ride a horse again. So that was another phase. And that part happened a lot faster than the rest of it for me, because surprising, when I started getting back on horses in October, I had no timetable. I didn't know what to expect. I've never been in that position before to know when I'll be able to ride again. And just a month later, I was back in races. So that part happened very fast for me.
Rajiv, jockeys are notorious for coming back off of injuries much quicker than typical people get healed or are better from having an accident or being hurt. When you first had the accident and you were talking with your team of doctors, did they inform you about a time frame relative to your being able to come back?
Different doctors had different opinions about time frame. I've seen multiple doctors because in my position, I wanted to be properly evaluated, and I didn't want to just be narrow-minded and just think one guy has the answers. So a combination of what a doctor said plus how I was feeling was going to determine when I was going to ride again, and there wasn't really no timeline set. Because of the unique kind of injuries, the combination of injuries that I have, it was hard to speculate an exact time frame for the doctors, but estimated usually within 2 months bones heal. But this was more than bone injury. Some of the other injuries combined with the bone injuries were pretty bad as well. And after 4 months, my bones were expected to be healed, and they weren't, and I was still in significant amount of pain. So in my perspective, I didn't have a timeline, because no matter what the doctors tell me, I also knew how I felt as well, and I know what it takes to ride a horse and to be in a physical capability to control a horse, and also being an athlete to perform at my best, and I knew I was far from that. So even if my bones were healed, and the doctors would okay me to ride, I could not ride because I was not in the physical shape to perform good.
Rajiv, you're riding equine athletes that weigh upwards of 1,100, 1,200 pounds. They're going 45 miles per hour, and there's 11 other horses around you. And you experience this horrific accident. Walk us through the mental aspects of putting that accident out of your mind so that it doesn't really enter into the equation in terms of moving forward and getting back on horses to race again.
For me personally, I've been injured many times, and I've had serious injuries even my first few years of riding where my life was at risk. And for me, I never had fear in riding because I always felt like I would rather die doing what I love to do than not live at all. And for me, there was no point that there was ever any fear or any doubts that if I was able to ride again, that I would ride because of a fear of injury. What I feared was not to have what I love to do taken away from me. That was my biggest fear, to never be able to ride again without me doing it myself.
Rajiv, you came back off this injury in such a big way, extremely successful right off the bat, a lot of support from the community of owners and trainers here in the New York area, and now you find yourself coming into the Belmont Stakes with the morning line favorite, a testament to your courage, your personality, and obviously your skills. How rewarding is it to be riding in the Belmont Stakes, let alone on the morning line favorite?
It's very rewarding. It makes me feel like all that I've been through was worth it, fighting to come back to ride. The whole time going to my rehab and going to bed at night, and a lot of times in severe pain, crying myself to sleep with pain, the things that kept me positive were dreaming that I'll be riding favorites in the Belmont Stakes and these big races. And even though that's the things that I dreamt about and hoped for, realistically, coming from where I came the last couple of years, it's kind of surreal that it's actually happened. it just makes me appreciate my life and everyone that I'm surrounded with. Like you say, the racing community. Throughout my career, I've been given so many great opportunities that I'm thankful for, and I've always thought of myself as a very lucky person, because everything that I ever dream of always happens good for me, and I'm so appreciative of that, and I'm just really enjoying what I do and having fun and just walk around with a smile on my face, because I can't help it. It's just, everything just happens good for me.
You teamed up with Irish War Cry for the first time in the Wood Memorial. You were victorious. Very impressive performance. Come into the Kentucky Derby, not such a successful result. Now we come into the Belmont Stakes, mile and a half. What is it going to take for Irish War Cry to be victorious again?
I think, like many other horses, or all horses in this race, the mile and a half distance, the stamina aspect of it is going to be the toughest and most important part of it. And for me as a jockey, for me to make him be successful, I think I have to nurse him along to get the distance. I think save something for that stretch, because it's going to be a long race with a long stretch. And I think it's going to be a race where whoever gets the distance the best is going to have the best chance of winning.
That's jockey Rajiv Miraj with Jeff Bloom yesterday. Jeff, some great questions there. I loved your question when you asked him about the mental aspect of, you know, laying there on the ground and wondering what's going to happen next and how do you come back from something like that. And he talked about how he couldn't imagine, you know, not being able to do what he loves. I mean, this is all he knows.
Well, that passion just comes out of him, Mike. I mean, yeah. All he really cares about is getting on the back of a racehorse. He loves riding races. And you heard him say, he goes, you know, I would much rather die doing what I love doing than not doing it at all. And, you know, really, the fact of the matter is he came back from some horrific accidents, and this last one really was bad. And so to overcome what he overcame and to be as successful as he has been so quickly, you know, there's that whole issue of, well, is he going to be scared? Is he going to be tentative? Is he going to have his horses in the right spots? And jockeys have to overcome so much. There's so much pressure on them. But he's so passionate about what he does. He's so good at what he does. You know, and in addition to that, he's such an easy guy to root for. He's got the skills. You know, he understands the technical aspects of it, but he's a good guy, too. And so it's fun to see him doing so well.
And from what we understand, he's a pretty good cook, too. And he called the other night, invited us over at the last minute. Of course, we had dinner reservations and we couldn't make it. But he invited us over to his house here for jerk chicken, because I keep telling him, hey, you're from Jamaica. I got to try some of this jerk chicken. And JT, it would have been great to spend a little time with Rajiv over there and tried some of that jerk chicken. But he told us about a new recipe that he has. It's teriyaki. It's for steak, by the way. Teriyaki and jerk combined. And what did he call it?
Jerkyaki.
Yeah, so this is his new formula. We could have had some jerkyaki at our good friend Rajiv's house the other night.
Yeah, he's a classic guy, and that was a fantastic interview, Jeff. Thanks for that. That was really good. Rajiv, you know, he is probably the most passionate jockey that I've ever met. We went to dinner with him many, many times in Florida when he was doing his rehab, and he was, you know, a little depressed that he wasn't riding, and he kept saying it over and over, all I want to do is ride horses, all I want to do is ride horses. And of course, we're all looking at this guy that's like, you know, shriveled up and sore, and I mean, we're going, the guy's nuts.
Yeah.
Why would you do that to yourself, you know? And he kept repeating it over and over, and I became a believer. And when he won his first race back, I was just, you know, blown away. And then he took off. I had encouraged him to go to Florida. He stayed here in New York. I said that was like the worst advice I ever gave anybody. And he just took off. So it's great that he's back. I know from a personal standpoint for him, it's absolutely true that he would rather die riding a race than he would, you know, live making jerky.
Doing something that he doesn't love, yeah.
And he sincerely appreciates and understands the significance of getting this additional chance. He does not take it for granted. You can hear it in his voice. You can hear, you see it the way he carries himself. And it shows up when he's coming to the finish line on these horses. And so how rewarding for him. And think about it. Here's a guy that probably shouldn't have been back riding races, much less walking around, and he's riding the morning line favorite in the Belmont Stakes.
Yeah, and if you don't think jockeys are tough athletes, just take a look at guys like Rajiv and guys like Robbie Alvarado, who's going to be aboard J Boy's Echo in today's Belmont Stakes. Another great comeback story. Robbie broke his leg and ankle back on April 23rd. That's right, April 23rd, when his horse stumbled at the start of a race at Keeneland, and here he is back in the Belmont Stakes sitting here on June 10th, and that's just one of several injuries he's come back from. You remember in the late 90s, Robbie suffered that skull fracture, which required doctors to replace a portion of his skull with a titanium plate. He came back in October of 2000, a spill that fractured his left wrist. He fractured ribs, his fractured pelvis, and partly collapsed lung in 2000. Came back from that one. And then you remember in 2011, he broke his nose 4 days before the Kentucky Derby. He was taken off of his mount. That was Animal Kingdom. As we know, the rest is history. Animal Kingdom would go on and win. And here he is back again. So good luck to Robbie Alvarado aboard J-Boy's Echo later today as well. They are extremely tough athletes. And, of course, we do everything we can to support the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And you should, too, at pdjf.org. All right, guys, we're going to get to another break. When we come back, it's our Fasig Tipton Turf Showcase Race of the Week. That's the Manhattan. We'll take a look at that one and then tell you what's coming up in hour two. Several more Belmont guests still to come. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
Pin Oak Stud, home to Broken Vow, sire of 2016 Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner and Eclipse finalist Champagne Room, as well as other Grade 1 winners like Cotton Blossom, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, and Sassy Image. Also home to millionaire and multiple graded stakes winner Alternation by Distorted Humor. A six-time stakes winner, including the Peter Pan, Pimlico Special, and Oaklawn Handicap. Alternation was represented by his first yearlings, which sold last year for up to $160,000, over 20 times his stud fee. Broken Vow and Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan?
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I've thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Amalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Upstart, the best 2- and 3-year-old son of leading sire Flatter.
But Upstart is pulling away, and he is pulling away impressively to win the Holy Bowl.
Upstart became the East Coast leading Kentucky Derby contender after demolishing a star-studded field in the Grade 2 Holy Bowl and retired a multiple graded stakes winner and 6 times Grade 1 placed with earnings of more than $1.7 million. Airdrie Stud's Upstart. Think about it.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch, and it's Classic Empire turning for home with a 2.5-length lead. Cloud Computing has moved into second. Always Dreaming has dropped back through the field. They're coming into the final furlong. Classic Empire getting the Preakness with Cloud Computing just over Classic Empire in the Preakness Stakes.
That was 3 weeks ago in Baltimore. Cloud Computing not here. Always Dreaming not here in New York this afternoon for the Belmont. But we have a really contentious field of 12 set to go. We're going to continue to talk more about that as we move throughout the show this morning. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Jeff Bloom. Lee Delapina, our producer, is back in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios as we get you set for Belmont 149. And the race preceding the Belmont, that's a pretty good one, too. It's the Grade 1 Woodford Reserve Manhattan, and it has a purse of $1 million. It's a mile and a quarter on a turf course that is going to be firm today because the temperatures are picture perfect. The weather is picture perfect. Temperatures in the mid-80s, plenty of sunshine, great day for racing. JT is, as I would always say, Mother Nature.
She must be a racing fan.
Well done, my friend. She has to be.
I didn't know it was a fill in the blank. It's currently 72 degrees right now, but it's going up from there.
Yeah, it's definitely going up from there. Anyways, back to the Manhattan. It's our Fasig Tipton Turf Showcase Race of the Week.
They're off in the Breeders' Cup Turf.
Gio Ponti adds the million to his Grade 1 collection.
Wise Dan's got him. Wise Dan, brilliant in the mile.
$3 million. Breeders' Cup.
Little Mike now to seize the lead as they make their way toward the top of the stretch.
Point of Entry has defeated Animal Kingdom.
Nothing like turning the Keeneland Lawn into your personal playground. It is all Tepin to win the Coolmore, Jenny Wiley.
Well, I mentioned a mile and a quarter. 9 horses entered into this year's Manhattan field, and the favorite, lukewarm at that, is number 3, World Approval, 3-1 on the morning line. Mark Cassie, Julian Leperoux, your team, pairing up back-to-back wins in his last two, including that win in the Grade 2 Dixie at Pimlico 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's a very strong race. I mean, from top to bottom, you could make a case for almost everybody in there. Time Test is an interesting horse in that he got beat in nose last time out. It was his first start in the U.S. in a long, long time. He ran in the Breeders' Cup Mile back at Keeneland, but he ran a big race that day. He's come back and had 2 excellent works for Chad Brown, and Chad Brown is just on fire right now. Started warming up right before Preakness and then just has been great ever since. This horse comes in with a 124 racing post rating, which is huge.
Wow.
And he's, I believe, 5-1 on the line, so kind of like him at a nice price.
Yeah, Time Test, Javier Castellano aboard, and that's the team, Javier and Chad, that won the Preakness 3 weeks ago. They've won so many big races together. How about Divisadero? Jeff, you and I sat there and watched Divisadero win the Turf Classic at Churchill back on Derby Day, and Buff Bradley has had some pretty good horses in his time. Divisadero right up there with him.
Yeah, and look, he's no stranger to Grade 1 wins. The horse, kind of like an in-and-outer, always brings his A game, but sometimes it's just, for whatever reason, not good enough. That was over a track that might have had a little bit of moisture in it. Whether this track, being as firm and hard as it is going to be favorable to Divisadero, not really sure, but certainly a horse that you can't toss out. And new jockey in Johnny Velasquez aboard for today's race.
Jude, how about a horse like number 9, Sadler's Joy, a horse that has some pretty good form? He's run some really good races. And then last time, 3rd in the Grade 1 Man of War here at Belmont, that was on May 13th. What do you do with a horse like Sadler's Joy?
Well, I think if you're playing pick 4s or pick 3s or something, you got to use him. I mean, first of all, he's ultra consistent. He hasn't been out of the money since Saratoga, and that includes 1, 2, 3, 4 victories. Mike Smith gets aboard today for Julian Leperoux. You know, that could help him. I mean, Julian's a fine jockey, but sometimes just a little bit of a change, a little different venue could provide something different for the horse and make him move forward. Julian opts to stay with World Approval, who's a big contender. His race in the Dixie was outstanding. So I think Saddler's Joy is a major contender. He's by Kitten's Joy out of a Dyna former mare. It just doesn't get any better than that for grass racing. And although he's only made $342,000, he's run against some pretty nice horses and certainly has a big chance.
You know, it's always interesting because Julian had his choice of three horses in this race. It's a grade one race, and you have to look at that. I mean, we're talking about a lot of money on the line. It's $1 million purse. Excuse me. And Julian did decide to stay with World Approver, who ran such a big race in the Dixie. In fact, out of all World Approval's races that I've seen, I think that by far, to me, was the most improved or the most impressive. And World Approval looks like he's really in a good place right now. Because, really, both Saddler's Joy and Divisadero are horses that you wouldn't want to have to take off of in a race like this.
I think Julian was just trying to stay on Classic Empire.
Oops, riding for Cassie.
Well, yeah, a lot of times it is political.
Yeah,
it might not have anything to do with the fact that, you know, that would be his choice to ride. And he's not going to tell you if you ask him.
There's no question. A lot of times it is political. You have relationships, those connections. You know, you have to protect those. Oftentimes, though, that goes by way of out the window when you're talking about $1 million purse. Because it is, you know, these are situations where you're going for the money, but you never know for sure exactly. And sometimes, too, you know, when it gets close to entry time and the jockey agent has to make a commitment to that trainer, there might be one of those other horses that's on the fence, and then they decide to go. But in any event, Julian has ridden three of the horses in this race.
All right, well, that is your Phasic Tipped and Turf Showcase Race of the Week, the Manhattan, 5:37 Eastern this afternoon. It's all part of our coverage that begins at 2 o'clock Eastern time here on the network. Make sure you visit horseracingradio.net to check out a listing of affiliates, SiriusXM channel information, and to listen worldwide. It's all there at horseracingradio.net. We're back with hour number two right after this word from Phasic Tipton and a quick pause, 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The inaugural Phasic Tipton Turf Showcase takes place Sunday, September 10th in Lexington, Kentucky. An exciting addition to the Phasic Tipton sales calendar, the Turf Showcase is the only yearling sale in North America exclusively for horses with turf appeal. Did you know that nearly 7,000 races were run on turf in North America in 2016? And more than 40% of graded stakes this year will be turf races. The demand is growing, so don't miss your chance to buy a yearling with true turf appeal. Sunday, September 10th in Lexington, Kentucky. Visit PhasicTipton.com.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here's Cloud Computing going for the upset. Classic Empire digs in. Cloud Computing goes alongside. They come to the finish together. Noses apart. Cloud Computing has defeated Classic Empire and the Preakness.
IRAP with the lead. Practical Joke giving all he's got. IRAP 31-1 wins the Toyota Bluegrass with Julian Leperoux aboard.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Royal Moe and Gormley battling strongly. Gormley looming into the lead now. Gormley takes the lead, and Gormley wins the Santa Anita Derby.
Always Dreaming set down for the drive by John Velasquez, and he's moving away. State of Honor is up into second, and impressive edge. Canavera too little, too late. But inside the 16th pole, the 2017 Florida Derby to Todd Pletcher. And Always Dreaming, they won it by four in the end.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Ponta for the Pick Four, and former jockey Jeff Bloom, our producer Sean C. We are here above the finish line at Belmont Park on a gorgeous morning. Temperatures on their way to the mid-80s. Plenty of sunshine for this afternoon's test of the champion. And a fast main track should be in the offing, as well as a firm turf course for what is a tremendous day of thoroughbred racing here in Elmont, New York. If you're a horse racing fan, it's kind of like Christmas morning with horses when you wake up today to start taking a look at these cards. Because, JT, there are some great horses going to the post today, including the champion filly Songbird, who goes in the Ogden Phipps on the undercard.
Yeah, she's just an amazing, amazing filly, and her lone defeat came to the great beholder in the Breeders' Cup. Heart-wrenching for her fans, but today they'll probably get a little vindication.
Yeah, Jeff, 12 horses set for the Belmont Stakes this afternoon. The only horse returning from the Derby in Preakness, the only horse to compete in all three, will be Looking at Lee for Steve Asmussen, and what a story that would be if Steve could go back-to-back in the Belmont ever after having won his first one last year.
Well, it's certainly a possibility. Here's a horse that's going to really need a heated pace. This horse comes from out of the clouds, but in reality, knocking on the door in each of the previous two classics, the Derby and the Preakness, both really respectable performances, especially in the Kentucky Derby. The horse, you know, he's maintained his weight well. Steve's always been high on this horse, and if he gets the right kind of pace up front, we might see back-to-back wins for Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen.
Well, once again, our coverage this afternoon begins at 2 o'clock Eastern, 2 to 5 Eastern. Anthony Stabile and Jason Bides will take you through the undercard that's all presented by Breeders' Cup and presented by visitbarbados.org. And then at 5 o'clock Eastern, we will segue into that network broadcast of the Belmont Stakes. That's presented by TwinSpires.com. And again, a complete list of affiliates and SiriusXM channel information is available on our website, horseracingradio.net. Well, the Breeders' Cup comes up November 3rd and 4th, and we are proud to say that we will be there as your exclusive radio home once again here in 2017. Can't wait to get to Del Mar, and I know Dora Delgado with Breeders' Cup can't wait to get there either, and she's with us now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dora, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. Good morning to all of you.
Yeah,
what a beautiful day we've got here today.
Spectacular day, and what a day of racing. And Breeders' Cup Challenge action abounds here at Belmont today.
Incredible lineups we've got. The racing department here, led by Martin Panza, puts on an incredible lineup of some of the best horses in the country, and really kind of tailors right into what we're trying to accomplish with the challenge is that these races that are designated as Breeders' Cup Challenge mean so much more to the owners that want to compete on racing's biggest stage. So they travel, as Songbird does, from California to New York to try to capture a race that means more in terms of the benefits that you're going to get and pointing your way towards the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
These Breeders' Cup style cards have to make you feel good. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, as they say. And this festival type racing that's so popular now, it's all because of the Breeders' Cup, isn't it?
It is. We, when we started this program back in 1984 with one day of racing, the idea was always that it would just continue to expand and get bigger and better. And imitation is the most sincere form of flattery, because racing festivals took off all around the world, and Breeders' Cup has tried to keep right up and not be eclipsed. But when you've got the Dubai World Cup putting out millions and millions of dollars, and now Hong Kong, Australia, everybody's jumped in. It's one of the things that we've had to take a hard look at to make sure that we're offering the best in benefits and VIP experiences, and to make sure the quality of our races are unparalleled. And I think at this point in our this will be our 34th running, and it's just going to be amazing. First time ever at Del Mar, we're going to bring the world's best horses together, and that's what it's all about. From the time racing was conceived, is my horse better than your horse? And now it's on a global stage. It's not just New York horses competing against other, East Coast. It's everybody coming together on one international stage to make sure that the world knows who the best horses are. And it's so exciting.
Dora, so many of the connections work backwards from the Breeders' Cup. They take the end of the year and they say, how are we going to get to the Breeders' Cup? And then the next step is you look at that stakes calendar, and while it used to be you look at the purse structure, you see how much your horse can earn running in some of those big races. Certainly the calendar plays a big role in it, but when you see that win and you're in distinction, that carries so much more weight for not only the Breeders' Cup to benefit by assembling these great groups of horses, but for the connections to focus on those races. And you pointed out a horse shipping all the way from California to come to New York to potentially get that free berth into the Breeders' Cup.
Sure. I mean, for the entry fees alone, we put over $6 million in free entry fees up every year by designating these 81 races as part of the Breeders' Cup Challenge Win in Your End Series. There's 32 across in international countries. There's 49 here in our U.S. and Canada. So it's a very balanced program. We cover all of our divisions. Everybody has a chance from East Coast to the Midwest to the West Coast to make sure that you've got a chance to go and win free entry fees, win an automatic selection, get your travel fees paid if you're based outside the state where our event is being held. So I mean, and for internationals, it's a $40,000 travel award, and it's just one of those things that owners look for. They look for that value in that race. It's great to win those black type races and get those graded stakes wins. But if you're pointing towards the Breeders' Cup, you absolutely want to make sure that you have a shot to possibly win a free entry fees, free travel. Our owners get, I mean, the most amazing VIP packages. We'll comp, you know, a portion of their hotel stay. They get, like I said, their horses travel. We'll pick them up at the airport with VIP, you know, executive car services. They have the most amazing parties and special events to go to. Bobby Flay hosts the Taste of the World every year at the Breeders' Cup, where 15 incredible chefs come in and prepare the most amazing food. And that's an exclusive event for our owners and trainers and their guests. And it's just an amazing experience. We want to make sure that if you're going to make the commitment to come to Breeders' Cup and be part of this amazing event, that you have the best time while you're there.
Well, Dora, let's talk about that Breeders' Cup. We're talking about Del Mar, and it'll be the first time the Breeders' Cup has been held at Del Mar in Southern California. And, you know, a couple of years ago, Breeders' Cup made the decision to go to Keeneland, and it was a very small venue by Breeders' Cup standards. And people said, well, we don't know if that's really going to work. It's not really a Breeders' Cup or a typical Breeders' Cup type of setting. Let me tell you, that was a tremendous Breeders' Cup, and Keeneland did a remarkable job, and I would expect nothing less from Del Mar here in a few months as well.
That's right. Keeneland really set the bar. They have so much to be proud of, and I think for a solid year leading up to that event, all I heard was from people was, you know, it can't be done. It's going to be a disaster. This won't work out. And then those same people had to come to me afterwards and say, that was incredible. They pulled it off. It was just one of the best events we've ever had. And we're going into Del Mar with that same mindset. It's more about the quality of the event, you know, not necessarily the quantity. We want to make sure that everybody there that is paid to come and be part of it has a great experience. And that means we're not going to, you know, pack it in with a lot of general admission and people that are you know, kind of that didn't pay a premium price. It's we're going to limit that crowd so that people on the first floor can move freely, that you can get to the concessions, that you can get to the mutual lines. One of the biggest fears that a lot of people had about Del Mar was the traffic, because they've all experienced opening day at Del Mar and the traffic nightmares getting in and out. We're taking a page from Keeneland, and we're going to go use that shuttle system again that was so successful there, where we had off-site parking for almost, you know, everybody that was attending, and shuttled them in consolidated buses. And then they got dropped off at the front door, and those shuttles took them back. And it was a breeze getting in and out of Keeneland. And we're going to expect the same thing here at Del Mar.
Yeah, Del Mar parking and traffic can be a nightmare. That's a great idea. And it's certainly going to make the fan experience that much better. Yeah, I have to admit, I was among the skeptics about Keeneland, and I was certainly the first one to applaud the 2 days there. It was one of the most spectacular Breeders' Cups that I'd ever been to. It was just fantastic racing, and just a great job by you guys and Keeneland to develop that program, and thankfully Mother Nature was a helpful hand too. You know, we didn't get any rain, but it was just a really special event.
It really was. We're gonna hope to those same rain gods that we don't get hit at Churchill in 2018. You know, it's always a little iffy when you bring it back, you know, to Kentucky, that you're either going to have one of those spectacular fall days, or it could be a little cold, could be a little rainy. But for Churchill, we're certainly hoping that we get blessed with some beautiful days there as well.
Well, it should be great. The weather's always good at Del Mar, and we can't wait to be there. Of course, we'll be there as your exclusive radio home. You'll hear the Breeders' Cup once again here on the Horse Racing Radio Network worldwide, horseracingradio.net, affiliates across the country, and, of course, on Sirius XM. Dora, we can't thank you enough for all your support of what we do. Breeders' Cup has been wonderful to us for a very long time. Our first Breeders' Cup was at Monmouth in 2007. I'll never forget that day, mainly because of the weather, but because it was our first Breeders' Cup, and it's been a wonderful marriage, a wonderful partnership, and thank you so much, and we look forward to the racing action this afternoon and leading up to the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
We totally agree. We could not ask for a better partner than you guys, and good luck today, and we'll see you at every challenge race down the road.
Yes, you will. Enjoy the day.
Thank you.
Dora Bye-bye. Delgado, Senior Vice President of Racing Nominations at Breeders' Cup, and like all of our guests who appear on the program, she will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Embrace your passion at embracetherace.com, and where would you love? It's all there at embracetherace.com. Yeah, think about that. 2007 was our very first Breeders' Cup. We have now just extended our deal with Breeders' Cup, by the way. Haven't officially announced it, but I guess I'm doing it right now. We have extended that deal 2 more years, so we will be the official radio network all the way through, let's see, 2020. So how about that?
Wow, that sounds like so far off.
It's not really.
I know it's not.
Yeah, when you think about it, really not.
Yeah, you know what's cool, too, because, of course, I live in San Diego, and you start seeing the buildup and excitement from the local community, folks getting their first opportunity to welcome the biggest racing, in the game. You know, that's the Super Bowl of horse racing, the World Championships. And so you're starting to feel the buzz, the hype, the excitement as it gets closer. And you're certainly starting to see the transition take place at the facility itself. You know, they're starting to lay out the plans and sort of repurpose, if you will, the way it's going to be set up to house, you know, the crowds that will be there for the Breeders' Cup. It's a very exciting thing for a community to have something like that.
All right, still plenty more to come for you this morning here on the Equine Forum, including that interview with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith as he looks back on the career of Holy Bull, who sadly passed away this week on Wednesday night. And Mike will take a look at so many of those moments that he and Holy Bull had together. It's a really fun look back on his career and on what was a tremendous life for Holy Bull. We'll do that with Mike Smith coming up right around 9:35 Eastern Time. Tom Leach, our colleague, who will be with us this afternoon on our coverage of the Belmont Stakes. Tom, the voice of the University of Kentucky Wildcats, he's going to sit in with us on this next segment. We'll talk a little Belmont, and we'll give you some updated information just breaking here at Belmont Park. And we'll do that when we come back here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Have you been looking for high-quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-5480.
Shackelford. Won or placed in 10 graded stakes.
Shackelford's got the lead. Shackelford Animal Kingdom. Shackelford has done it.
Won three grade ones.
One from on the go. Shackelford is still there. They're coming down to the finish. And Shackelford.
115 buyer speed figures.
But the one in front of the current in faith is Shackelford. He's out in front. Shackelford wins the claw.
Shackelford. Visit DarbyDan.com.
Pin Oak Stud,
home to Broken Vow, sire of 2016 Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner and Eclipse finalist Champagne Room, as well as other Grade 1 winners like Cotton Blossom, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, and Sassy Image. Also home to Millionaire and multiple graded stakes winner Alternation by Distorted Humor. A six-time stakes winner, including the Peter Pan, Pimlico Special, and Oaklawn Handicap. Alternation was represented by his first yearlings, which sold last year for up to $160,000, over 20 times his stud fee. Broken Vow and Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Eclipse Award-winning champion Blame retired to stud with over $4.3 million in earnings, including a historic victory over Zenyatta in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Now Blame is the leading sire of his crop by graded stakes horses and ranked number one in the sales ring with yearlings bringing up to $600,000. Top runners this year include track record setter Onus, Grade 1 placed Going for Broke, stakes winners Sweet Victory and Exaggerated, and three-time stakes victress Queen Caroline. Blame at Claiborne Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Oh my goodness, look at Frosted today! Frosted's 10 in front! Frosted is absolutely rubbed in the mat by...
Frosted annihilated his competition in the 2016 renewal of the Grade 1 Met Mile. His 14 and a quarter length win resulted in a new stakes record of, how about this, 132.73, and his 123 buyer speed figure is the highest since 2007 and the fastest ever at a mile. That scintillating victory makes Frosted your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. A multiple Grade 1 winning son of champion sire Tappet, Frosted earned more than $3.1 million and is a graded stakes winner in both the United States and Dubai. A winner of the Grade 1 Wood Memorial at 3 and historic Whitney Stakes at 4, Frosted is Tappet's leading money earner in North America. Learn more about Frosted and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Holy Bull comes roaring off the turn, bracing for a challenge here from Cherokee Run. Cherokee Run confronts Holy Bull, and Holy Bull is digging down and is responding, and he shrugs off the challenge of Cherokee Run. Virginia Rapids is running in third, Devil is Due is fourth, but it's Holy Bull. And ridden by Mike Smith, and he'll go on to a magnificent Met Mile. Holy Bull by five.
And welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom Durkin with the call of that 1994 Met Mile, and Holy Bull just dusting so many of the top horses in training that year, including Cherokee Run and Devil is Due. It was a really loaded field. I believe Colonial Affair was in there. Really top-notch effort from Holy Bull, and that's one of the races that Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith will talk about when he looks back on that career coming up in just a couple of minutes. Guys, breaking news with the Belmont Stakes. Epic Harris, the Japanese horse who had been kind of questionable throughout the week because of a hoof issue, JT, he is officially out of this year's Belmont.
Yeah, not surprising. He's been having trouble all week long getting sound, and the vet scratched him this morning.
Yeah, so Epic Harris not in the race. Jeff, what does that do to the complexion of this race? He was a horse that many people thought could potentially be the winner.
It's a significant scratch because not only is Epic Harris a very talented horse, the pace scenario is going to change substantially. This is a horse that definitely would have been, if not on the lead, very close to the lead, certainly pressing the pace. So that changes the pace scenario quite a bit. Certainly doesn't help out horses like looking at Lee, for instance. It makes things easier up on the front end. And Epic Harris was definitely a horse you'd have to consider. And it's also just a real bummer from the standpoint of, here's a horse that ships in from Japan and is going to run in an American Classic. We love seeing that kind of thing.
Well, as we await our colleague Tom Leach, who is making his way here from the parking lot, I believe. He sent me a text a few minutes ago, and he's on his way up to the booth. Let's go ahead and flip-flop these segments because we do want to have enough time to bring you this Mike Smith interview. And yesterday I did take the time to visit with Mike and talk to him about Holy Bull. Now, keep in mind, he was aboard Holy Bull for all but one race in that stellar career. It was a career that saw Holy Bull win 13 of 16 races, and Mike, the only race he missed was his maiden win, and then Mike picked up the mount in his second career race and rode him in all of those big efforts. And Mike took the time to look back on the Bull with me yesterday.
Mikey, what do you remember about getting the news that Holy Bull had left us?
Well, although it was, you know, extremely sad, you know, to lose him, in saying that, though, you know, Jonabel, the whole crew at Jonabel and Darley, they have done such a tremendous job with him, taking care of him. He's actually been sick for a little while, you know, battling the melatonin, you know. So although it was sad, it was also really great to see how well he was taken care of and the life he got to live. It was an incredible life. Not only was he an incredible racehorse, but he got to live the life as well.
September 2nd, 1993. It's the first time he ever rode him in a race. It was an allowance race right here at Belmont Park, and he drew off and won pretty easily. What do you remember about that day?
Well, all of his races were pretty spectacular, even when he didn't drop and win easy, you know, so say like the Travers, you know, when he beat Concern. They were all incredible races, and he was just he'll always be my first big horse, so to say. He was the one who brought the fans out. People would bring signs, and there's just so much about him. He had so much charisma, you know. He was just an incredible horse.
Well, he'd come back afterwards, win the Futurity, then take the In Reality Stakes. And then as a three-year-old, he debuted with that big win in the Hutchinson, came back in the Fountain of Youth and suffered his first defeat when he flipped his pallet. Take me back to that day. Any concern there after that happened? What was that day like?
You know, to be honest with you, that day's a blur. I don't really remember it that often. I know that going into the gate that day, he had probably already flipped his pallet. He had gotten so upset about something that afternoon, whatever it was, in the post-parade, and he just didn't run, but we knew he got back to the barn safe and sound, and after we worked him after that race, well, we knew we were back on track, you know.
And then that Florida Derby performance, pretty special.
Incredible. Yeah, that was the real Bull came back and showed what he really is and who he really is. You know, every race that he ran other than that race when he flipped his pallet and of course, the Kentucky Derby, he was always tremendous, always, always, always.
Yeah, what went wrong in the Kentucky Derby?
I have no idea. You know, I wish I knew. It was just a day that, again, a day that he just wasn't, for whatever reason, just didn't show up.
Well, he showed up the rest of the time, though, especially in that Met Mile, which was his next start after the Kentucky Derby, taking on the older horses here at Belmont Park, and that was just a spectacular performance.
Yeah, it was. It was, you know, back then especially, and still to this day, the Met Mile is really a stallion's race. Back then, as much so as a Derby, you know, a horse got to show that he had that kind of high cruising speed, you know, but yet taking on older horses for the first time, and not just older horses, I mean some serious older horses, and for him to win the way he won, which was in pretty handy fashion, was incredible.
He got that challenge from Cherokee Run at the top of the stretch in the Met Mile, and then you asked him to run, and he just exploded and ran away from the field. What was it like when he would give you that run at that moment every time?
I just get goosebumps thinking about it. It's hard to explain, to be honest with you. You had to have been blessed enough to be on him to feel what it felt like, but just tremendous power, He would just drop down and just take off. I mean, it was like he just started flying all of a sudden, low to the ground. It was crazy.
One of the moments I'll never forget is sitting at Saratoga, and I was with my brother. One of the only times my brother and I have gone to the races together, and it was the Travers Stakes, and Holy Bull and Concern hooked up coming to the top of the stretch. I think I was in section X of the grandstand, so I was right there when Concern was making his move. Tell me about that performance. What a gutty effort by Holy Bull that day.
Yeah, you know, Wayne had Tabasco Cat in there and put in a rabbit to they call him a rabbit, another speed horse, just to make sure the pace was fast, which it was. It was tremendously fast. I was going to try and ease back off of him, but I couldn't without grabbing too much of a hold of him, and we didn't like to do that because he had flipped his pallet before, so we never really liked to grab too strong a hold of him because he would flip his pallet, so had to go quick. Very quick early on. As a matter of fact, at the time, it was probably the second fastest fractions I think that had ever been set in the Travers. And then to hold off a tremendous closer like Concern, as you all know, he went on to win the Breeders' Cup Classic, just a tremendous horse, and had such a turn of foot. To be able to hold him off was just, he had to have been there to understand it.
Yeah, Tom Durkin said there was cause for concern at the top of the stretch. Were you concerned at that point?
I knew I still had something left. I just was hoping it would be enough, and it was.
I can remember, too, when he won the Woodward later that year and thinking about Tom Durkin's words when they were going out the backstretch, and he said, Holy Bull settles into the rhythmic beat of his long and powerful stride. Tell me about that stride.
Well, Durkin was just brilliant, at just probably the best, if not the best, race caller there ever was. And some of these comments he would come up with, these little sayings, were just incredible. And the way he said he'd sprout wings at the half-mile pole. Best horses in training that day. Arguably one of the greatest Woodwards of all times as far as talent in the race. And for him, again, to just not only win it, but to dominate it was just incredible.
So when you think back on Holy Bull and you hear the words Holy Bull and his name, what are some of the memories that are going to come back to you, the top memories anyway?
Everything we just talked about, and just him, you know, at the farm, you know, just hanging out, me visiting him, giving him carrots. He was just, even that name, just that name in itself means something. But then when you see the horse that's attached to the name, it just fits. No one else could have been named that.
Yeah, very well said. Well, Holy Bull will be missed. Let's spend just a minute or two real quick talking about the Belmont Stakes this year, because you're going to be back here, obviously, trying to win another Belmont. You've done it a couple of times. Brian Lynch, the trainer, tell me a little bit about that horse in the Belmont.
Don't know much about him, to be honest with you. Just have to wait and see. He's very lightly raced. I think he's only run three times. The good thing that's going for him is he does have talent. He's shown that. We don't know anything about the distance. We'll just have to wait and see. And his trainer, Brian Lynch, is on a roll. Tremendous trainer, great trainer, happy to be riding for him. Have had success with Brian in the past, and I'm glad we're teaming up because he's hot right now. So hopefully it'll carry on through.
Is there a certain point in the race, mile and a half here at Belmont, a certain point that you say, okay, now it's time to go? Does it work like that?
No, not at all. It just depends on the pace, what's happening, what you're getting away with, what you're not getting away with early on in the race. I mean, who knows if the pace is blistering early, then we're probably up against it. If I can get away with something at some point somewhere, depending where that's at, you know, I'll decide when I'm going to get brave and push the button and see what happens, you know.
That's Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, two-time Belmont winner, looking back on the career of Holy Bull, and then, of course, looking ahead to Meantime, who goes to the post later this afternoon in the Belmont. And, great stuff from Mike. I mean, you can tell he remembers every detail of every race that he's ridden, not just aboard Holy Bull, but all these great horses. And the memories just kind of come flooding back as he starts to talk about it.
Yeah, I don't know how often he thinks about it, but probably relatively frequently. But for him now, everything's push button. You know, he makes it sound like it's so easy. It's not as easy as he makes it sound. but he's got such talent and takes such great care of himself, and looks like he's going to be around for quite a few more years. I think he's really enjoying his career right now.
Yeah, and Jeff, he's at a point in his career now where Mike can kind of pick and choose his spots. He doesn't have to ride every race. He doesn't have to be aboard the low-level claimers. He can pick those spots and the horses that he wants to ride, and that's working out pretty well for Mike right now.
And rightly so. He deserves that at this point in his career. But the interesting thing is when you watch Mike, and of course most of the time you're watching him are on these big race days, he's riding even better, stronger, faster, smarter. Everything about it really is, like Jude said, he makes it look so easy. It isn't easy, but it is easy for Mike Smith. And one of the really interesting things about Mike as well is when you hear him discuss a horse's past performance history, the trainer, and what their approach is to doing things. I mean, he's such a student of the game as well. He's a fan of horse racing, and he's so smart. He doesn't take anything for granted. And when he gets on the back of a horse, he knows every other horse in that race, what their history is, what their running style is, and what little tricks you can do to get a little bit of an advantage to get that win.
Yeah, very well said. All right, we're going to get to another break. When we come back, our colleague Tom Leach will be with us. We'll talk a little Belmont Stakes, maybe give you a few selections as well. We'll do that next. It's all ahead on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti, a seven-time Grade 1 winner and earner of more than $6 million, is now the sire of a Classic winner and a Breeders' Cup Sprint winner with his first crop.
Dre Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Dre Fong's the leader. Dre Fong has won.
That powerful win in the Breeders' Cup Sprint capped a perfect 2016 campaign for Dre Fong that included a dominating win in the Grade 1 Kings Bishop at Saratoga and ended with Dre Fong being named Eclipse Champion Sprinter. In addition, Gio Ponti is also represented by the Classic Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs. And Castleton Lions is also home to Justin Phillip, who retired sound after competing in 23 graded stakes, winning 11 of those, including this dominating performance in the Grade 1 AG Vanderbilt.
But it will be Justin Phillips to win the Vanderbilt by two.
Look for Justin Phillips' first crop of two-year-olds in 2017. For more information, visit CastletonLions.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Adina Springs Stallion, Fort Larned.
Fort Larned to catch, and they're not going to catch him.
The fastest two-turn horse of his generation, recording eight fires from 107 to 117 and nine Ragozins from 1 to 3.5.
And he's coming home, turning handsprings. Fort Larned, brilliant in the Stephen Foster.
A winner of 10 career starts and nearly $4.5 million in purses.
It's nose and nose to the wire. Fort Larned has won it.
Fort Larned won the Grade 1 Whitney Handicap in a hand ride late with a final time of 147 and 3/5 before wiring the field in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Classic in 2 minutes flat, earning a 117 buyer, and then taking the Grade 1 Stephen Foster by 6 1/4 lengths in 147 and 2/5. First crop two-year-olds by Fort Larned have sold for up to $170,000. Classic Mr. Prospector Speed and Free of Northern Dancer. A superior racehorse. Fort Larned, standing at Adina Springs. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And War Emblem is toiling as they turn for home. Medaglia d'Oro, Sunday break. Sarava has come on through to take the lead. And War Emblem has given way. No Triple Crown for the 24th year. Here comes Sarava and Medaglia d'Oro, though, striding to the line together. Sarava on the outside. Medaglia d'Oro toward the rail. They're coming down to the finish. A huge upset is looming here under the line. Sarava has won the biggest long shot in the history of the Belmont Stakes at 70-1. Medaglia d'Oro was finishing second there. And farther back, Sunday break. And a huge disappointment today for War Emblem.
Tom Durkin with the call of that 2002 running of the Belmont Stakes. And Sarava, as you heard, the longest priced winner in the history of the race, 70-1. Denied War Emblem a Triple Crown after War Emblem stumbled at the start that afternoon. And Sarava, trained by Ken McPeak, it was his lone win in the Belmont. He's back this year with Senior Investment looking to pick up win number two. JT, Senior Investment will not be 70-1. He is 12-1 on the morning line. He has a finishing kick. Channing Hill is going to be back aboard. This is a horse who has some ability and maybe could make some noise later today.
Absolutely. This race is wide open. I mean, we've seen a couple of major defections now. We've got horses that are questionable going a mile and a half, and he seems to be a horse that could possibly enjoy that distance.
Well, don't forget, all of our coverage this afternoon kicks off at 2 o'clock Eastern with that undercard broadcast from 2 to 5. Anthony Stabile and Jason Bides will bring you coverage of what is an absolutely rock-solid, stellar undercard program here this afternoon. That coverage presented by VisitBarbados.org. And at 5 o'clock, we segue into the network broadcast of the Belmont Stakes presented by TwinSpires.com. And our colleague Tom Leach, the voice of the University of Kentucky Wildcats, will be with us on that broadcast and throughout the afternoon. And he's with us now on the Equine Forum. Tom, good morning, my friend.
Hello, gentlemen. Good to be here.
Happy Belmont Day.
Beautiful day.
No Triple Crown, but a contentious race nonetheless.
My boots I purchased in Baltimore last year are still sitting at home. I believe the weatherman today, and he was right. It's very contentious. Talking about Saraba, I was just thinking, you could box all in the exacta and have a chance to make money today.
That's true.
You could. I'm in. You could. Well, Irish War Cry will now no doubt be the favorite with Epic Harris being out. And even Irish War Cry isn't going to be 2-5.
Right.
No. And you're going to see horses like Taprit get a lot of action. There's going to be a lot of money on Taprit. I think you're going to have a lot of horses in that 8-10-1 range, with Irish War Cry ending up as the favorite, probably soft at maybe 9-2-ish, just because, yeah. I don't know, even though Epic Harris scratched, I think the pace scenario really got affected, and so that's going to adjust things a little bit. But like you said, Tom, the reality is I wouldn't be afraid to throw some wild cards in there and hope I get some extreme exotics to play out.
There will be nobody, I would think, very really close to 70-1 in here, because we were talking about this at some point yesterday. There's hardly, I don't know if there's anybody in here that would just, you'd walk away, I have no idea how that horse won. You'd look at every horse and think, he loved the mile and a half, or he had a great trip, or whatever.
You know, we had a conversation yesterday with the breeders of Twisted Tom, and he's a New York bred runner, carrying that New York bred local banner, so to speak. And, you know, if you look at Twisted Tom and you look at his pedigree, well, Tom Leach, I'll go to our Twisted Tom. let me tell you, he's a horse that, from a pedigree perspective, could be live here today.
On the dam side, the first four dams are all sired by Belmont Stakes winners. Thunder Gulch in the first generation, then Seattle Sleuth, Stage Door Johnny, and Affirmed. And then you've got Creative Cause by Giants Causeway on the top side. So, there's no doubt he should love the distance. Chad Brown trains him, so that will and Javier rides him, so that will kill the price. But if you look at speed figures, it would be a stretch. But I would think, Jude, from the training perspective, do the speed figures, is it lessened in importance versus the pedigree when you get to this kind of race and how rare it is?
I think so. I think the most important thing is being a stayer. If you're a stayer, and his pedigree certainly leans to being a stayer, obviously, with that lineup of Belmont winning sires. I think that's the most important thing. It's funny, Sir David Seal, when we were in Barbados, and the race, the Sandy Lane Gold Cup, is a mile and an eighth, but he was talking about horses in that race having to be stayers. You have to be able to stay the mile and an eighth. And the mile and an eighth is a distance that separates a lot of horses from just your average horse to a horse that can go on. So if you're talking about a mile and an eighth, when you step to a mile and a half, that's in another dimension. And I think Twisted Tom certainly is a horse that you should throw in your trifectas, absolutely. And I want to stick up for you for a minute, being Twisted Tom, because all you drank was water last night.
Yes.
I was there. I witnessed it. So,
thank you.
Jeff, your helicopter is here.
It's about time. I was just told I was going to be banished to the gazebo in the infield there. Around the lake, or inside of the lake.
So you'll be closer to the chopper.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think that is where it's going to land.
It actually landed right right in the infield, the helicopter just coming into Belmont Park. And then you mentioned that gazebo, the Windstar Silks on the side of that gazebo, which is in the middle of the one of two ponds in the infield here at Belmont Park. And, of course, Windstar, the owners of Creator, who won the race last year for Steve Asmussen. Tom, we touched on this earlier, Steve Asmussen with another opportunity to win the Belmont, and how amazing would that be? Here's a guy who spent so many years trying to break through in the Belmont Stakes and came so close and couldn't do it. He wins it last year. Now he could go back-to-back with Looking at Lee.
And the same kind of horse. Creator was a late runner, and not often that you see at the end of a mile-and-a-half race horses real enthusiastic about passing a lot of horses, but Creator made a long sustained stretch run, and that's what I would think we would certainly see from Looking at Lee if he gets there today. And He's been consistent. He's the only one to dance every dance.
You know, Steve has talked about it quite a bit, looking at Lee, and he says all the time, you know, I've done everything I can do with this horse. He's a solid horse, but the reality is this horse needs help. Because of his running style, it's going to require some kind of pace, some kind of contention on the front end to allow this horse to pick up the pieces, so to speak. And it's always interesting. People look at the form, and they'll look at sort of late-running closers in a race going a mile and a half, and the reality is, the race doesn't typically just fall apart on the front end in the Belmont Stakes, where horses coming from the rear can just all of a sudden pick up all the pieces. This horse is talented, and I think because of Epicaris scratching, their tactics might be a little more aggressive today. And then again, the wild card is and always is in the Belmont Stakes. Nobody knows which horses want to go a mile and a half. I don't care about their pedigree. Certainly it doesn't hurt to have horses that have that staying power bottom side with the stallion. The reality is a mile and a half is a big separator for horses.
Yeah, and speaking of pedigrees, when you look at a Belmont winning type of pedigree, you look at number 12, Patch. Now, he's a son of a Belmont winner in Union Rags, who was ridden by John Velasquez in 2012. Johnny is aboard Patch for Todd Pletcher this afternoon, and Patch is also out of an AP Indy Mare, another Belmont winner. So does it get much better than that when you're looking at Belmont pedigrees?
Well, yeah, that's strong. I mean, 25 years ago this week, AP Indy won it. He was a lot more experienced than this horse, so you have to hope if you're rooting for Patch to get there first that it is that pedigree that carries him home. And, you know, he, in his, third race, ran second in a grade two Louisiana Derby, so yep. That tells you he's got some class.
He does have some ability, and another horse that has ability, Jude, that might fly under the radar is a horse you've been talking about all week, and that's Multiplier, who won the Illinois Derby two starts ago, came back and finished sixth in the Preakness. They add blinkers today, somewhat of an interesting move, but here's a horse that can finish.
Yeah, he can finish. He went the last 3/8 of the Illinois Derby in 36-1, and let me tell you, that's very unique for any horse to run a mile and an eighth and run the last 3/8 in 36-1. He came back in the Preakness. I'm not sure he loved the track. He finished sixth. He kept to his task the entire time. We know that Brendan Walsh has been pointing to the Belmont. I think Brendan Walsh is an excellent trainer. The horse has been working well. He gets blinkers for this, and that's going to help him because he's kind of a lazy horse. He kind of sits back and relaxes. He's never really been great as far as his morning workouts are concerned. I think this horse has a big chance today, and he's a huge number on the board.
Yeah, how about the undercard, guys? You take a look at some of the races on the undercard. We mentioned all the grade ones, six grade ones, and Songbird going to the post in the Ogden Phipps. You have that Met Mile, which is always a stellar race. If you're a horse racing fan, it doesn't get much better than this, does it, Tom?
No, and the nice thing about what they've done with this day is that when we don't have a Belmont Stakes that offers the appeal of a Triple Crown possibility or any compelling storylines that jump off the page, you still have a great day of racing to get excited about. And if you are a horse player, big fields, challenging handicapping puzzles that can lead to some good prices. So it's kind of a mini Breeders' Cup here in the middle of the year.
How does the defection of Epicaris affect the running of this year's Belmont Stakes, in your opinion?
Affects the pace possibly a little bit. I saw his race in Japan, the last race he ran in Japan, and he was up close to the pace. And I think in the UAE Derby, he was on the outside in the 10 hole and had to be used a little bit early and stayed on till the end. So you would have think at a mile and a half, he would have been, if not, I don't think he would have been on the lead, but he would have been probably sitting right there, probably about the same spot as an Irish War Cry, maybe, and then if he was good enough. So it takes a little bit of the pace out of it, and, you know, he was just an X factor in a lot of ways, and so it's kind of a fun element. I think you'll see more of that. I saw today they are offering again the $1 million bonus if a Japanese-based horse can come over and win the Belmont. So they're trying to entice that market to get involved.
Well, and keep in mind, they're actually taking wagering on the Belmont Stakes in Japan, and that won't change because Epicaris is out, right?
No, they're still going to take the bets.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see how that affects handle and how that moves things around.
The only thing is, if you were a Japanese horse player who was against Epicaris, you're crying today. Yeah, you were going to get great prices on everybody else in Japan because it's not mixed in with the money in the United States. It was just going to be money in Japan in their particular pool, and so they would have pounded the hometown horse.
Any chance that Gormley, the Santa Anita Derby winner, rebounds in the Belmont today?
Absolutely. I think he's the horse that nobody's talking about. And he's the only Grade 1 winner in the field. As a matter of fact, he's won two. He's going to get a great trip on or near the lead. I think he's a force.
I don't see it. I don't think he wants to run against these horses. But
these
he's been training
horses,
well. Yes.
This is like the easiest field he's ever faced.
I think he got lucky in the Santa Anita Derby.
Well, the Santa Anita Derby was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But he won the front runner. We were there that day. He's not as bad a horse as everybody thinks.
We'll know the answer soon enough.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a difference of opinion that makes horse racing.
That's right.
6:37 Eastern time is that post time for the 149th test of the champion. Again, our coverage kicking off 2 o'clock Eastern here on the network. And, yeah, if you are just joining us, you heard us reference the defection of Epic Harris, the Japanese runner. He has been declared out of the race. That happened, about 30 minutes ago. And so he will not go to the post. So we have a field of 11 set to go and a wide open field. So take your pick. Maybe it's Patch. Maybe it's Taprit. Maybe it's Looking at Lee, who finally breaks through and picks up win number three in his career. We'll see if he can do it coming up later this afternoon. And can't wait to bring you that coverage. Tom, going to be a lot of fun, my friend.
Looking forward to a great day of racing with the beautiful weather that we discussed. So you just couldn't hope for anything better. Well, yeah, you could. You could hope for winners.
We're always hoping for winners. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Power.
But Tapazar is just playing too good today, and it's going to be Tapazar and Garrett Gomez coming home with his ears pricked to win the Sham Stakes.
Passion.
And a big performance from Tapazar and Cory Nakatani as they romp into San Fernando.
Performance.
And Tapazar, a sterling performance today. Tapazar and Cory Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Gainsway stallion Tapazar is a Grade 1 winning miler by leading sire Tappet from the family of champion Untappable, and is Tappet's only Grade 1 winning miler at stud. Tapazar retired sound with more than $972,000 in earnings following a career in which he broke his maiden by 10 and a half lengths at Churchill Downs at 2, went wire to wire to win the Grade 3 Sham Stakes at 3, and was a runaway winner of the Grade 2 San Fernando and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at 4.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich is Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're gonna need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What'll we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello?
Hello, boss. Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's. Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to Belmont Park in Elmont, New York. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Jeff Bloom. We are taking you through this Equine Forum, just about ready to wrap things up for you. Don't forget, we're back at 2 o'clock Eastern Time with that coverage of the undercard presented by visitbarbados.org. And then we return at 5 o'clock Eastern Time to bring you our exclusive coverage of Belmont 149, and that's presented by twinspires.com. And you can check it all out at horseracingradio.net. Listen worldwide on your computer, smartphone, or mobile device, horseracingradio.net. And there is a complete listing of affiliates and Sirius XM channel information right there for you on our website. Well, if you've been following us all week long, you'll know that one of the hashtags coming out on HRN has been hashtag Beast of the Belmont. And that refers to the Big A, Anthony Stabile, who is the host of our Express Bet radio program every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon on Sirius XM. And Big A, the Beast of the Belmont, is with us now. And, all right, Beast.
Hi, boys.
First of all, Beast, good morning.
Good
Happy
morning.
Belmont Day.
Happy Belmont, Baron.
This is your day.
Yes, it is.
Beast of the Belmont is because?
Hashtag Rags to Riches, hashtag Union Rags, hashtag Drosselmeyer, hashtag Creator, hashtag Top 5 Favorite Horse of All Time Tonalist.
Hashtag, hashtag.
Hashtag those are all winners that you picked.
Yes. That's been 5 in the last 10 years.
Can this be verified?
Yes, it can. You go to VegasInsider.com. You can go to the archives on HRRN, all the podcasts of me talking about Tonalist for a month. Yeah, we can verify everything.
So
hashtag
why,
verified.
Why is this such an easy race to pick?
Well, I think pedigree plays a big role. I like to pride myself on being a little bit of a pedigree guy. You need to look for the horses coming out of races like the Belt, like the Derby and the Preakness that are running on at the end, especially the Derby. You'll find a lot of hidden gems in the Derby horses that are running on. And I think that's Tappert this year. If you watch the last 3/8 of a mile, Jose Ortiz will get him in a little bit of a jackpot midway on the turn. But when they come off the turn, he's staying on. He's continuing his run. I know people are going to say he was on the good part of the track, but they stay on. This last 1/4 mile separates the men from the boys. And those horses running at the end of races like the Derby and the Preakness, they succeed here. And the ones that are falling apart, the Irish war cries of the world that are looking for a place to hang their head at the quarter pole, they don't. So that's easy.
You don't like Irish war cry at all?
Not today. I was a big fan of his. I loved him in the Derby. I needed him for a lot of money in the Derby. And I don't think I've seen a horse in the Derby go from full to empty as quickly as he did. And it's really hard to trust a horse. We use that word a lot. Christina McManigal and I use that word a lot on Express Bet Radio. We don't trust these horses. I don't trust him to have to negotiate another 1/4 mile when at the 3/8 pole of the Derby, I was in Aruba or Barbados.
Right.
Barbados.
Barbados, yeah.
VisitBarbados.org is sponsoring our undercard coverage today of 2 to 5, me and Jason Bidas. So, yeah, Barbados. That's it.
Okay, I'm just waiting to see where you're going next.
It's Tappert. It's Twisted Tom. There are about 412 Belmont winners at his pedigree on the damn side. And, you know, Patch, sometimes it could be as easy as Union Rags won the Belmont, Grandsire AP Indy won the Belmont. Todd ran second with a horse very similar in 2014 to Tonalist, the commissioner, who had all sorts of mile-and-a-half pedigree. So I think those are the three. And the horse the Pontiff likes, Multiplier. I think those blinkers are going to get him a little sharper and in the game, in the flow of the race a little earlier. And that helps here at Belmont. Every now and then you'll get a creator to weave his way through the pack and get up in the last couple of strides. But I think you want to be in the flow of the race early.
Any chance Songbird gets upset on the undercard?
No. But I'll tell you what, that's the blast off the Naira Betts, the Weekend Stakes preview presented by Naira Betts. Best bet is the coldest exactor in the history of mankind, Songbird over Highway Star.
All right, there it is. The Big A, Beast of the Belmont, Anthony Stabile. He'll be part of our coverage, hosting our coverage this afternoon beginning 2 o'clock Eastern. Appreciate it, Big A.
Got it, guys. Good luck.
Enjoy the Belmont. Beast of the Belmont.
Beast of the Belmont.
I'll never be your Beast of the Belmont.
Hmm. I have no idea what that was, Jeff Bloom.
Yeah, I'm speechless.
No clue. Jeff was just standing there with this look on his face. He was
trying to book me for his next party at Belly Up Tavern in Del Mar.
All right, we want to thank all of our guests for coming on the show today, making this show possible, kicking off with Michael Hernan from Gainesway, Rajiv Miraj, who took the time to sit down with Jeff yesterday, Dora Delgado from Breeders' Cup, our colleague Tom Leach, who was with us a short time ago, and Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, and, of course, the Big A, Anthony Stabile. If you missed any portion of this show, all you have to do is head over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. A podcast will be available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can do it on our website and do it Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Going to be a good day, JT.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Jeff Bloom, going to be a sensational afternoon of thoroughbred racing, my friend.
Yeah, it's not going to. This is about as good as it gets. We got the perfect weather and all kinds of good races.
All right. For our producers, that's Lee Della Pina back in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studio. And for Chauncey, Sean C., on site with us here, pushing all the buttons and handling all the social media. I'm Mike Pena. For Jute Feld and for Jeff Bloom, we'll talk to you this afternoon, 2 o'clock Eastern Time. Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.